This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyesu Wuhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Now, people are aware that the vaccine exists. People know that it's being rolled out in certain countries, and I think that's a perfect time for those syndicates to come in and say, we have a vaccine. You're not getting it in the hospital. You're not getting it in your private clinics. Come to us.
That was lawyer Nora Hutunam, who represents some major pharmaceutical companies on the likelihood that fake COVID-19 vaccines are in the works. Details coming up. Also, a Boko Haram attack kills 10 in Nigeria's volatile city, Maiduguri. And Ghana becomes the recipient of the first shipment of COVAX vaccines. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Officials in Nigeria's Borno state say 10 people have died from the explosions around the northeast city of Maiduguri. Residents in affected areas have fled their homes. Local officials suspect Islamist militant group Boko Haram was behind the blasts, as Timothy Obiezu reports from the Nigerian capital Abuja.
There was relative calm on Wednesday, and residents who fled their homes last night returned to the affected areas of Adamkolo, Gwangi, and Kaleri. The Borno State Governor, Babagana Zulum, visited two hospitals in the morning and confirmed in a statement that 10 people were killed in the attack, including children who were playing in a field. He said 47 others were injured. No one has claimed responsibility, but Maiduguri resident Sani Adam blamed the blasts on the group Boko Haram.
The death was as a result of projectiles fired by the Boko Haram from the outskirts, which landed in three different locations.
Maiduguri is the capital of Borno State, the epicenter of the Boko Haram insurgency. For years, the group has carried out bloody raids and suicide bombings here. The last one until Wednesday occurred 1 year ago. Governor Zulum said authorities are taking measures after the explosions. He said the military has repelled the insurgents. But Maiduguri resident Andy Rufai said he heard multiple explosions and was terrified.
When I came back from work, I started hearing the explosion, which is close to my area. And later, there was gunshot and a multiple of the bomb blast, more than 10.
The Borno State Health Ministry says it is taking care of all the injured people. An estimated 36,000 people have been killed since the Boko Haram insurgency started in 2009. Boko Haram has been fighting to create an Islamic State based in Nigeria. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
The Nigerian Center for Disease Control is preparing for a possible Ebola outbreak as the country struggles with a second wave of COVID-19. Authorities say surveillance at land borders and airports has been increased, especially from countries where outbreaks have been reported. For more, International Edition's Chinedu Ofor spoke with Dr. Anthony Ibe, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Howard University and Georgetown School of Medicine in Washington.
Well, I think we should mount some effective and comprehensive border control. If we're talking about Ebola now, we want to look at where the person is coming from. The people who are coming from where we now know there's an outbreak, I think we should restrict those people from coming in. That would be a reasonable thing until the outbreak is under control in those areas. Then mount a screening regimen for every other person. Otherwise, the country will be in trouble. And at the same time, also alert the healthcare personnel in the country about the possibility of Ebola showing up into the country. Furthermore, without causing panic.
What are some of these practices that may lead to an Ebola outbreak?
Some of those practices will be our funeral and burial practices, which involve, in some cases, washing the body of a dead person because of funeral rites. Those practices should stop at this time. I know there are cultural issues, traditional issues, but when we look at it, that this can be a way to spread the disease in case that person, that individual died from Ebola or any of these infectious disease processes. Then avoiding contact with blood and body fluids, such as urine, feces, saliva, sweat, you know, semen and vaginal fluid. So in that case, for that area, people should consider using barrier methods if they are not in a monogamous relationship during sexual intercourse.
What are some of the surveillance measures to detect Ebola, and does Nigeria have the capacity to do this?
I mean, without sounding condescending or so, we all know that all developing areas have very poor healthcare infrastructure. And even in developed countries, we see how their healthcare infrastructure have been really overwhelmed by the pandemic of COVID-19. Then when you now think about developing areas where they already had poor healthcare infrastructure, it is therefore frightening to think about Ebola coming back to Nigeria against the background of COVID-19. That is very frightening.
Experts are also worried about the rash of wet markets springing up in many cities of Nigeria.
This can also be dangerous because these animals, if they are infected by the virus, the fluids, the blood, and even the raw meat become a major source of infection. So it would be reasonable to avoid those markets, or if we must eat from these animals to be, these meats has to be well cooked. And also we need to find out whether these animals were freshly hunted down or they were already dead before they were brought to the market.
That was Dr. Anthony Eby, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Howard University and Georgetown School of Medicine in Washington, speaking with VOA's Chinedu Ofor. Meanwhile, a flight carrying 11,000 vaccine doses against the Ebola virus has arrived in Guinea after it was delayed by bad weather. They had been due to land on Sunday from Europe, but the plane was grounded by heavy dust brought by winds from the Sahara Desert. Ghana has become the recipient of the historic first shipment of COVAX vaccines. A statement by UNICEF Ghana representative Claire Dufay and WHO Ghana representative Dr. Francis Kasolo says the shipment represents the beginning of what should be the largest vaccine procurement and supply operation in history. The COVAX facility plans to deliver 2 billion doses of COVID-19 vaccines this year. International crime-fighting agencies say organized crime groups have all the networks and methods needed to smuggle falsified, substandard, and stolen COVID-19 vaccines across Africa. This as the continent begins to roll out millions of vaccines to try to stop the pandemic. Darren Taylor has more.
Interpol crime intelligence analyst John Patrick Broom says, as is the case in the rest of the continent, criminal gangs in East Africa import fake medicines from Asia, mostly China and India.
They consist of a lack of active ingredients as well as other harmful substances in some cases. Illicit medications are primarily entering the market in Eastern Africa through the avoidance of regulations. There's violence-based criminality, and there is corruption as well, and corruption which is at a number of different levels.
China and India are expected to produce much of Africa's vaccine supply. That's already a big red flag, says Nigerian journalist Ruona Meyer, whose work has exposed state officials and pharmaceutical company executives working with criminals to distribute falsified medicines in West Africa. Meyer says there won't be enough vaccines, and as infection rates and deaths spike in some countries, criminals will introduce fakes into supply chains. She points out they did this quite easily with chloroquine when demand for the anti-malarial drug skyrocketed last year after it was touted as a cure for coronavirus.
So you have people who started producing fake. You have people who started breaking down these routes. There were cases where all these type of things were hijacked at ports. Again, they want to break the supply chain and cash in from there.
Authorities throughout West and Central Africa seized large quantities of falsified and substandard chloroquine. Police in Cameroon shut down several pharmaceutical manufacturers who were producing fake chloroquine.
The infrastructure alone is mind-boggling to be able to do all these things. Nobody does all this if there is no demand.
Lawyers Marius Schneider and Nora Ho-Tu-Nam represent some of the world's biggest pharmaceutical companies when their products are falsified in Africa. Ho-Tu-Nam says criminal organizations have been waiting eagerly for mass immunization programs to start and for vaccine shortages.
Now people are aware that the vaccine exists. People know that it's being rolled out in certain countries. And I think that's a perfect time for those syndicates to come in and say, we have a vaccine. You're not getting it in the hospital. You're not getting it in your private clinics. So come to us. So there is going definitely.
Schneider says groups who deal in illicit black market vaccines always do their best to give their activities a veil of legitimacy.
We have seen instances where NGOs, which have very similar names to pharmaceutical companies, I cannot give you any names there, but have been engaged in the distribution of these vaccines. These NGOs had as a mission to distribute real vaccines to the people. Employees on the ground in African countries were implicated in a vaccine traffic. So, you know.
Mark McAuliffe of the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime says North Africa could be a major entry point for falsified and substandard vaccines. He says uncontrolled trafficking of fake medicines, such as Tramadol, a pain reliever, has been happening across the vast region for decades.
Counterfeit vaccines and fake vaccines, basically. I think there's a big danger of that, both in the Maghreb itself, unregulated territories in Libya, definitely, but also in Tunisia and maybe border areas of Egypt, less so in Algeria, perhaps, but especially in the northern Sahel.
McAuliffe says criminals dealing in falsified medicines exploit gaps in health services, and this will be especially true of COVID-19 shots, which is going to make the crime very difficult to control in North Africa.
This form of trafficking, it is tapping an actual health sector need. And the fear is that in the case of the vaccines, a similar scenario might unfold where there are shortages, especially in border areas, that are preyed upon by criminal enterprise trying to fill that gap.
Crime analysts say Africa's porous borders and bribable officials make it very easy for organized crime groups to move fake and substandard vaccines to wherever demand and profits are highest. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
More than 24 U.S. senators from both parties have called on President Joe Biden to reverse predecessor Donald Trump's recognition of Moroccan sovereignty over the Western Sahara, calling its claim illegitimate. Morocco's government has intensified lobbying in Washington with a main goal of defending its territorial sovereignty over the Western Sahara and to garner support from members of Congress and the American administration to maintain Trump's recognition. William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, explained these developments to VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
It is true that the Biden administration announced that it's reviewing all of the Israel normalization agreements, and already it's suspended arms sales to the UAE along with Saudi Arabia. It's considering whether the Sudan government even had the legal authority to normalize as a transitional government. And it's looking at the Morocco agreement as well. But in the statement at the State Department, it was clear that they were congratulating Morocco and Israel for its normalization and don't want to rock the boat. The Morocco deal is problematic. And so what I suspect the Biden administration will do is it will slow walk any of the Trump commitments, such as as the creation of a consulate in the Western Sahara in Dakhla or Laayoune. And the fact that 25 senators wrote a letter means that it would be hard for the U.S. government to give authorization for such programs. What I do expect at some point is a U.S. statement of principle on annexation of territory by force. And that issue has been raised by Senator Inhofe and Senator Murphy, who say, how can the U.S. oppose Russian actions in Crimea and eastern Ukraine, but support Morocco annexation? So I think that's where we're going to see some concessions of the Biden administration to the Senate on that principle.
The official stance of most countries, including the U.S., has been to hold a referendum in Western Sahara to determine the fate of the region. What are the options for the Biden administration in dealing with this situation while maintaining the strong U.S.-Moroccan relations?
They were exactly the same as they were before the Trump deal, which is why even the Trump announcement made two references to the previous U.S. position. So under international law, the process at the U.N. is really the only process. Any outside recognition is not material to the legal concerns. And under the 1991 ceasefire accord, there's supposed to be a referendum. Now, the ceasefire ended in late October, and now we have a low-intensity conflict. So the real business at the UN right now is not determining the final status of Western Sahara, but ending the conflict. We also have a UN monitoring mission that's supposed to monitor a ceasefire that's ended. And so we're going to have a process not entirely unlike what we have for Libya right now, leading to a ceasefire and then political negotiations. The U.S. position since the 1970s and now has been contradictory, because on the one hand, the U.S. is sympathetic to the Sahrawi quest for self-determination, but it also has this long relationship with Morocco going back 200 years and strengthened during the Cold War and after 9/11. So the political question is, can the U.S. both have a good relationship with Morocco and respect Sahrawi rights? And I think it can. And ultimately, if we have a deal on the final status of Western Sahara, it would work well both for the Sahrawis and the Moroccans to have some sort of power sharing agreement. Neither side supports that right now, but it would make a lot of sense, as was in the Baker Plan in the early 1990s, for Morocco to cooperate with the Sahrawis on some aspects of their governance, like foreign affairs and military defense, and have the Sahrawis run the internal.
That was William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, speaking with my colleague, Mohamed El-Shenawy. Niger's election commission has declared a ruling party candidate, Mohamed Bazoum, the winner of Sunday's presidential election. But opposition leader Mahamane Ousmane, a former president who was toppled by a coup in 1996, claims he narrowly won the vote count but has been cheated by widespread fraud. Police fired tear gas to disperse his supporters as they burned tires in the streets. An observer mission from the Economic Community of West African States said the vote was held under free, fair, credible, and transparent conditions, although two attacks left eight people dead, including seven election workers. Cameroonian truck drivers have accused security escorts in the troubled Central African Republic CAR this week of abandoning the convoys when they were attacked by rebels. The drivers say hundreds of trucks are stuck in Cameroon until CAR and UN authorities can better guarantee their safety. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé.
Cameroonian drivers say hundreds of trucks are stranded in the eastern town of Garoua-Boulaï on the border with the Central African Republic, unable to deliver needed goods to the CAR due to poor security. Troops from the CAR and the United Nations Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission, MINUSCA, have been providing security escorts for the convoys. But the head of Cameroon's Land Freight Transportation Bureau, Elhaj Umaru, says this week there have been four rebel attacks on convoys traveling to the CAR capital Bangui.
Revisiter cette fameuse escorte qui est mise en place.
Umaru says all strategies put in place to protect trucks, truck drivers and goods on CAR territory should be reviewed. He says just this week, some troops fled heavy shooting from CAR rebels and abandoned drivers and their trucks between Garabulai and Bangui. Umaru says some of the drivers were wounded, some goods diverted, and all trucks went back to Cameroon. Idrisu Manga, an official with the Cameroon Truck Drivers Union in Garabulai, said 9 drivers received minor injuries. He said more than 900 trucks stationed in Garabulai are refusing to transport humanitarian aid to Bangui until the security situation is improved. Manga spoke from Garabulai via a messaging app.
Non seulement nous couvrons nos compatriotes camerounais.
He says his trade union is for Cameroonian drivers, but because of the hardship in Garabulai, Manga says they have decided to extend a hand of fellowship to drivers from the Central African Republic and Chad. He says the union gives the truckers food, water, and toiletries. The CAR Minister of Transport and Civil Aviation, Arnaud Jubaye Abazeni, visited Cameroon this week to assess the transport situation. After a meeting Monday with Cameroon's transport minister, Jean-Ernest Messinangale Bibehe, he denied CAR or UN troops had abandoned the convoys. But he admitted it was possible they were what he called tactical withdrawals.
Vous le savez, notre pays fait l'objet d'une agression de la part de...
Abazani says President Faustin Archange Touadéra has taken appropriate measures to stop the rebels who are contesting his victory in the December 27 election from creating havoc in the CAR. He says with the support of CAR partners like Russia, Rwanda, and UN troops, many rebels have been neutralized. Abazini says security has been assured in most CAR towns, but there are still some pockets of resistance that the forces will handle. He says drivers should trust the CAR government. Abazini said in spite of the fresh attacks, a convoy of humanitarian and commercial supplies from Cameroon had reached Bangui this week. He assured Cameroon's truckers that adequate security measures have been taken. A spokesperson for the United Nations peacekeeping mission did not respond to a request for comment, but in a press release this week, MINUSCA acknowledged some challenges to escorting the drivers. The UN this week said the volatile security situation in the CAR was hampering aid deliveries and causing a steady rise in the price of staple foods since December. The UN's refugee agency, UNHCR, says by February 16, about 110,000 Central Africans had fled the violence that erupted from the December 27 elections. The UNHCR says 6,100 CAR civilians fled to Cameroon, 7,400 to Chad, 4,300 to Congo, and 92,000 to the Democratic Republic of Congo. The CAR accuses former President Francois Bozize, whose candidacy for the presidential election was rejected, of attempting a coup. He denies organizing December rebel attacks, which were repelled by UN troops. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Iheye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music
from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.